You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and today we are joined by a very special guest in former Arsenal defender Kieran Gibbs. Anyway, here are today's topics. Arsenal maintain their five-point gap at the top after a convincing win at Fulham. Man City find a way past Crystal Palace thanks to a second-half penalty. Bournemouth stun Liverpool at Vitality Stadium to snatch all 3 points, and Manchester United struggle at home against Southampton after Casemiro is sent off. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Yeah, and as Musty mentioned, we've got special guest Kieran Gibbs who joins us today. Kieran started off his youth career at Wimbledon before joining the Arsenal Academy in 2004. He made his senior debut in 2007 for the Gunners, and played until 2017, where he picked up 3 FA Cup titles along the way. Kieran's also played 4 seasons for West Brom before making the move over to this side of the pond to the United States and into Miami. Thanks, Kieran, for joining us today. Great to have you on the show, and obviously with Arsenal top of the table and things going well, that's where we've really got to start. 3-0 win against Fulham today in another London derby that they don't concede goals and win the 3 points. What's the difference, you think, in this Arsenal group and team than some of the teams that either you were in or Arsenal teams of the past?
Yeah, afternoon, boys. Appreciate the warm welcome. Fan of both of your work. And Robbie, I know you're a Wimbledon man as well, so it's a pleasure to meet you. I think we're showing our age mentioning the Wimbledon thing, considering they've been dispatched for a good odd 20 years. So, but yeah, no, I think, listen, with Arsenal at the moment, they're just really in the zone right now. And it's clear for everyone to see they're on a mission. They're showing all the signs of a championship team. They're holding on really tight to that momentum and their confidence. I think the difference, probably, if I were to pick a couple of things, would be they've kept the majority of their squad fit for most of the season, you know, bar one or two, Jesus and a few others. And that's obviously key if you're going for titles. I think the other thing would probably be like overall game management and momentum. I think it's been top. You know, when they've suffered a loss or they've been rocked a little bit, they've bounced back immediately this season. Maybe in the past, you know, a loss might have dented the boys a little bit and gone into a dip in form for probably 2 or 3 games rather than just one. And I think that that's just massive over the course of a season, you know. So I think that those two things stand out for me in terms of like major differences.
I think just the way that they play today, you know, Rob, I mean, God, blimey. I thought today they were as good as I've seen them for quite a while. Just the determination, and I'm desperate to get Kieran's kind of take on the manager, played with him at Arsenal, of course, a teammate. Just the determination, Rob, and the game philosophy of playing out from the back. And from minute one, I watched it so closely because Fulham wanted to say, OK, we can press. We're a pretty well-organised team. We've credited Fulham so much this season with being hard-working, well-organised, press well together, know exactly what they're doing. But Arsenal still found a way to play through that press right from minute one. And I think when they established that control, then they totally dominated the game. Some of the slick football through midfield into that final third where the penetration was there, the quality was there, the finishing was there. I just thought today was a real... And there's been a few of these for me where I'm like, wow, they look so good. And maybe still continuing to improve. Just on that, Kieran, and the philosophy of the manager, Mikel Arteta is a teammate of yours at Arsenal. Is this how you would expect him to coach, given what he was like as a footballer, a very technical midfield player, really good on the ball? Is this surprising you how well he's done in his first job as a main man with the style that he's employing at the club?
I think it's only surprised me from the fact that they have the youngest squad in the Premier League. Mm. And so, you know, to get that out of them this season so far would probably be the only thing that surprises me. I think Mikel's secret ingredient for me is his obsession with the game. You know, you have to be obsessed if you want to be, I mean, at the top of anything, but especially as a manager and going from playing into management. I think if I was to think of three or four qualities that a top manager has to have, you know, it would be things like intensity. So his passion, his heart, his desire. I think without that, you're going to struggle. I think his vision, you know, his identity, his values, the culture, I think it just fits well with the club. I think his character, you know, what kind of person he is, can he relate to this young squad that he has on a personal level? You know, we're in a new era now, and, you know, whether we like it or not, the game has changed. And I think he's just perfect for that, as he has a blend of modern culture that can resonate with the players. You know, he's easy to talk to. He's got a humorous side to him. He keeps the players' feet on the ground. That was a big part of, you know, what he was about when I was playing with him. And he's earned that respect, you know, that you need as a manager with so many egos. And then I think probably just above all of that is just been his execution this season. He's whenever he's had chances to make substitutions or squad rotation, like, he's kept such a healthy balance, and I think he's been spot on with that. So I just think it's a combination of all of those things.
Is there any sort of comparisons to the great Arsene Wenger? You worked under Wenger, you saw what was being built there. It wasn't some of his greatest years, he'd had so much success, but can you see any similarities in the two? Are they very different people?
Well, I mean, they're different in terms of probably more vocal. I think Mikel he's very intense, you know, like on the side of the pitch, and he's lively off the pitch. Whereas Arsene was probably a bit more quieter, but had probably more intent. And, you know, when he spoke, that you knew to listen, basically. So I reckon there's a few differences there, but Mikel's obviously learned so much from him, from playing under him. And I think he's probably just pulled styles of Arsene, of Pep, of other like figures that he admires, and just kind of packaged it all into one to be the manager that he wants to be.
Got to ask you, Kieran. I thought the club made a brilliant signing in Alexander Zinchenko. Obviously playing left back right now. A couple of things, though. Two questions, really. What do you think to Zinchenko in terms of a modern-day left-back? And on that position now, where we're seeing so many times the full-backs are moving into central midfield, really, to allow a midfield player to go and join the attack, is that something that you ever saw in your career? And if not, is it something that you would have enjoyed to do? And basically, just how do you find that, watching these full-backs go from outside and to midfield? And Zinchenko's probably one of the best in the Premier League at doing it.
Yeah, he is. And he's been well coached, obviously, under Pep, because that's kind of where that started. I can't really remember teams doing that too much over the years. So it's kind of like a new tactical thing. But he's brilliant at it. And you can tell how much it benefits the team. It allows the deeper midfielders to push higher up the pitch and, you know, sustain attacks and keep the pressure on. So I think it's a great tactic if you've got the right personnel to do that. It can be really effective, and we've seen it a lot this season.
Would you have done that? Would you have been comfortable doing that, Kieran? Would you have been okay doing that?
I would have liked to have given it a go in some games, because we used to dominate a lot of the games that we played in. And so, you know, because we just had such high technical players in the team that could keep the ball. We used to keep the ball for large spells of the game and try and, you know, suffocate the opponent with the ball. So it would have definitely been something that, you know, I would have liked to have tried, for sure.
I think there's always been times with Arsenal, Kieran, that regardless of how well the team is doing, they've always had, you know, a star player, a superstar. And there's been times, if that star player wasn't playing, that maybe Arsenal weren't at their best. We've seen Gabriel Jesus got injured in the World Cup in November. Many people thought, well, they haven't really got another centre-forward who can replace him. You know, they might drop out the picture a little bit. He came back in the squad today, came on for the last 10, 15 minutes of the game. I mean, how important is he to the squad? And is this squad different, that it doesn't just rely on one person? Because they can do things in different ways. Martinelli has days, Saka has days, Trossard today was outstanding. You know, has Mikel Arteta built something that's not just one-dimensional?
He definitely has. He definitely has. I just feel like he's just gotten the most out of all of the players that he's got. And it goes down to, you know, what I was saying earlier about one of the qualities that he has as a manager, to bring out the best in the players when needed. And I think he's just been spot on with that this season. And, you know, the quality of Ødegaard, Martinelli, Saka is clearly evident. But I just like how much they dog. When they don't have the ball, they pounce on it straight away. You know, they're just relentless for 90 minutes. They're so direct, but they're also efficient with the way they use the ball. You know, the way they use the time and space on the pitch is of the highest quality. And we just saw that so much today. So, yeah, you've just got all of these players chipping in at the right times this season.
Kieran, before we move on to Man City's game, I just want to make one comment first. I just thought today Arsenal looked like they played without a worry in the world.
No fear.
Super confident. We're all waiting, Kieran, and many in the media are waiting for them to look nervous or to, you know, of course, they've had to come back from deficits and they've done amazing things. But today I just thought they looked like so cool. Last question, mate. The title, like, is this going to happen? Like, what could, with them being so young, anything that you sort of feel could trip them up? Where could they not, or how could they not win this from here?
Well, then I think that then the only thing that you have to think about then is Man City, for me at this point anyway. Because I think with City, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't watched them as much as I've watched Arsenal this season. But the scary thing with City is that it's possible that they're kind of in cruise control at the moment. And on a whole, they're not at their very, very best that we've seen over the years, but they're still right up there. And you just wonder if they are kind of in second or third gear and they just ramp it up at any moment, then, you know, that could be trouble. Because obviously they've got to play each other still. But for me, it's their league. It's both of their leagues right now, and kind of everyone else is just playing in it.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could. Would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
I watched plenty of the City game this weekend against Palace. Well, you're right, they weren't at their tip-top best. Missed a couple of chances early on, got maybe a penalty that was a little bit clumsy from Elise. But Pep's teams always give you problems, and they're relentless, Kieran. You've played against Pep's teams. What's the biggest challenge? Is it that he's going to change things tactically? He's going to play a fullback in there. He's going to play inverted fullbacks or false nines. Is it always like second-guessing what he might be doing?
Yeah, playing against a Pep team, is like swatting flies, Robbie. It's like trying to swat flies, to be honest. I mean, I don't know what that game is where you have to whack the heads back into the hole and then the other one.
Whack-a-mole.
Yeah, it's similar to that. It's a bit of a nightmare because he's just got such high quality players and so they're so well drilled. It's a really tough ask going up against Pep, and he's a brilliant manager, and obviously you can see that with Arsenal now because Mikel's spent a few years learning under him.
I mean, I think the two of them, both teams, tactically are almost identical. The way that the fullbacks drop in, and it's very, very similar. Just to follow up on that question, like when I'm always fascinated because I didn't play. I'm way older than you, of course. But when you try and press a Pep side, and I guess it's the same with Arsenal now. How long is it when you realise, you're getting... It makes you kind of drop off, Kieran, doesn't it? Does it make you drop off and say, well, we can't get the ball? And is that how... I guess he just disarms teams because they drop back, let you have possession, or Pep's teams have possession. Is that the natural thing to do? Or do you believe that with an organised press, you should keep going because there will be a way to find a breakthrough?
Yeah, that's the double-edged sword that you face when you play against his teams. And it kind of gives you the feeling of probably what other teams would experience when we would dominate a lot of the games. And so
we've on the wrong side of it. We've faced plenty of good Arsenal side with Bergkamp and Vieira and Henry and all that. So we know what it's like to chase shadows, don't we?
Sorry, mate. It's not fun. I've also been on the receiving end of some of those games, and that's what his identity is. That's what he tries to do to teams. He kind of defeats them psychologically a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting with Manchester City because they brought in Erling Haaland, who become a little bit divisive. Like some people say they're not as good a team as him. He's got 28 Premier League goals now, incredible number. He does, in fact, change the way they play a little bit. A couple of questions here, Kieran, in terms of, are you one of those who believes they're a better team with him in, scoring goals and obviously chasing down Arsenal? And if you were playing today and he was pulling onto you as a left back and causing you problems, how would you deal with him?
Firstly, I mean, to say that after scoring 28 goals, you know, holds them back or makes them, you know, not as good a team is just hard. It's a hard one. Yeah. It's a hard one to admit that. Yeah. I'm sure he won't like hearing that, but I don't think so. I think that they're just as strong. They're just as strong. I just think that the rest of the team probably isn't clicking as much as they did, you know, maybe the last two or three years. But they're still not far off of it at all. And we will at some point see that extra gear that they've got. It's just a matter of time. And then probably playing against him, well... Firstly, I would have to pray. I think first things first, you just pray because, you know, let's not mess around. He's pretty much unplayable most of the time. So you want to just kind of hope that he's having an off day. And then after that, the best way probably in my opinion would be to try and stop the service that gets to him in the first place, you know, try your best to stop it at source.
De Bruyne and Foden and all those guys.
Right. You know, maybe doubling up on those players and the creative players, which again is another impossible task at times. But I would say that would be my only hope with his form right now.
Kevin De Bruyne, just following up on him, he's been out the side a little bit. Are you surprised that Pep? I mean, I guess Pep has periods with different players where he sits them on the bench for a little while. They come back and do well. I'm just surprised that De Bruyne is in that mode right now. Mm. Would he be always on your team sheet, Kevin De Bruyne? Are you a big fan of him? Or do you think that Pep's right and other players maybe deserve to play in front of him right now?
I'm a huge fan of his. And he's first name on the team sheet for me. Mm. There could be so many reasons, though, as to why, you know, he's not playing as much recently. You know, like there's a lot of moving parts. It could be anything. Mm. So, you know... let him have his rest as long as it means that we get to see the best Kevin De Bruyne that we know I'm sure all football fans want to see that, not even just City fans. We want to see the best players playing at the top. And so, you know, I think he's earned himself a few games here and there where he has that rest. It might be mentally, physically. As long as we get to see the Kevin that we love when he's available and 100%.
During the Arsene Wenger era, I suppose one stick that was always out for Wenger was that he never won the Champions League with, you know, such great teams and great players. Do you think that's something that resonates with Pep? People tend to keep talking about the Champions League. But at some point, will his focus have to be on making sure he wins that while he's Manchester City manager?
While he's a Man City manager, of course, it's going to be at the top of his priority list, because it's the only thing that he hasn't won with them, if I'm not mistaken. So he'll definitely want to tick that off. But I don't think it's like a big mental thing.
Why do you think they've failed so recently? Got to late stages, quarterfinals. I mean, final against Chelsea. What is it with this great team that we see every week in the Premier League, but somehow can't quite finish it off in the Champions League?
Honestly, it could be so many things, but they've gone for the title every year for the last 5 years, and to do that domestically and then in Europe, you know, if you fall short here and there, it's it goes to show that they are actually human, you know. So when I see things like that, I don't really look too much into it. They've come really close. I'm sure they're still desperate to get that final monkey off their back. But you know, we can't discard that they're a top team.
Would you at this point then, given that, would you be tempted to prioritise a Champions League now, Kieran, for them, and say, you know what, should we go flat out to try and get these 5 points back from Arsenal? And the stock answer would be, you know what, they should try and do both. But are we at the point where actually we will make sure I get my strongest team for the Champions League and maybe rest a few for the Premier League? Would you think that's a good strategy right now for Pep to try and get that Champions League trophy?
Well, I'm going to say that so that he takes his foot off the gas in the Premier League for a bit. So it's a bit unfair to ask me, I think, probably. So yeah, I might as well just say he should definitely do that and just go for the Champions League this year.
Yeah.
Let's turn it just to Liverpool, Kim, before we let you go. 7-0 win against Manchester United 1 week, 1-0 loss against Bournemouth the next week. Kind of inconsistencies with Liverpool that we've seen throughout the season. Why do you think the drop off? And is this, do you believe this might be the first cycle of the Klopp era? And he has to come with another wave of players to kickstart this thing again.
Well, he's going to have another cycle of players purely because of a lot of their ages. You know, he's been there for, I don't know, five, six years.
I think seven years.
Yeah, but I just think they just look a bit tired for me. They just look a bit tired emotionally, physically, mentally, to keep doing what they've done over the last 5 years. With the way that he plays, it's not surprising that, you know, they're having an off season. You know, I always find it funny when people, you know, are asking for Klopp's head, and it baffles me a little bit. But that's kind of the world we live in now, you know. So it's come to be expected. But they've competed heavily for every competition for the last 5 years: three Champions League finals, I think it is, a Prem title, challenging every year for that. There's been a World Cup in the mix. A lot of players went to that. You know, Klopp's style of play is so intense. It's just not surprising that they're having a bit of a down year.
Do you think there's any comparisons when I look back at the Arsenal kind of Arsene Wenger years, and then he had to kind of transition and try and build a new team? Is it similar? Do you think there's a similarity there, Kieran, where, you know, a new manager sometimes got to try and create a new team, and it's not always easy? I think Wenger had difficulties trying to reach the heights of a previous team that he built.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you've got to be blessed with the squad of players, and keeping everyone happy is also a task, because, you know, we haven't even mentioned the trying to replace players like Sadio Mane. In the form that he was in was near enough impossible. So I just think this is pretty normal for a club that's trying to, you know, achieve great things. And it kind of just shows you how tough the league is. You know, teams used to dominate for a decade before. I mean, even to try and just be available for Europe these days on a consistent basis is tough. We're seeing that now, right? Mm-hmm. Arsenal haven't been in the Champions League for the last 5 years. I don't know. 5 years, maybe. Yeah. So that consistency that you're seeing with City and these teams is just goes to show you, you know, how remarkable it is to operate at that level for a long time.
Just wanted to ask you personally. You know about the position of fullback. You were an attacking fullback. Want to get forward? It can make things happen in the attacking third. How did you find the balance of that when maybe things weren't going well for the team? Did you feel you had to concentrate a bit more on your defending? Because I'm trying to get your thoughts on Trent Alexander-Arnold in terms of he gets a lot of criticism at times for his defending, yet we all know he's a brilliant footballer in possession of the ball. Is the role of a fullback so different now? Robbie's talked about inverted fullbacks and Trent likes to get on. Or should Trent be working harder on the defensive side of his game to make him more rounded?
I'm quite a big believer on sticking to your strengths. You know, I think the old way was that in anything you do, you kind of work on what you're not good at in order to be more all-rounded. I feel like in the last few years, just in terms of like performance at whatever you're doing, that actually when you work on your strengths more, you can be even more effective at your craft. So I think it's a bit of a tricky one because, you know, when Liverpool were flying, it was, you know, this wasn't really mentioned as much. Yeah. And so it's easy to kind of point the finger when things aren't going as well. So I love Trent. I think he's a brilliant footballer. And I just hope that he continues to, you know, stay passionate about the game at such a young age because he's won so much already. And just focus on himself and his strengths and kind of just block out the noise.
All right, last one from me. Not an easy question. Top four, Liverpool. Do you think what you've seen against maybe Spurs and maybe Man United and Newcastle United, do you think Liverpool will do it, Kieran, and finish in the top four?
I think Liverpool do it. Right. I think Liverpool do it. I would like to see Liverpool in there and just leave it at, instead of Spurs, to be honest. That's what I would like to see.
Why not Spurs? Like,
is that an Arsenal thing, though, Spurs?
Not even. It's just, I feel like probably most football people will agree that they're not the most exciting team on the eye, you know, and that's just the reality. Even if I wasn't, you know, an Arsenal boy,
very
I'm just a fan of football, and I like to see
Mr. Gibbs,
good football.
Very, very diplomatically put.
But it's true though, you know, when you're competing in Europe, like on the big stage, you kind of want to see teams that are exciting to watch. And so Liverpool are obviously having a bit of a down year, but you know they're such an exciting team with great players, and you kind of want to see them playing at the top.
Just one more for me in terms of you know the modern day footballer. You joined Arsenal back in 2004, which is like the end of Robbie Musto's and my careers. You've been a generation of 2004 through till today. What do you see is like the biggest changes in players today? Or, you know, we see the technology, we see data, we see, you know, mental health issues. What's the biggest chance? Social media? What's the biggest difference from when you started back in the day in the academy to where you are today through into Miami and your current career?
That's a good question. In order to pick out what the biggest change is, if I could probably pick two, it would be the speed of the game. The speed of the game for me is just so much faster now because of things like technology and, you know, all of the fancy things that you get in order to get your performance to the highest level. So I would say the speed. And then the second thing, I would probably say that kind of football's has become more of an individual game of than more of a team, you know.
Looking after yourself and doing your own things.
I think so. I think, like, even just on the social side, like, everyone's kind of their own individual brand now, and, you know, you represent your club, but there's a lot more, ways to kind of market yourself as an individual. And so maybe sometimes that kind of leaks into the game. You know, you don't really have players that are at clubs for like 10 years anymore, you know. People move fast and the game changes quickly. There's just so much more money in the game now, and so it's easy to kind of come away from, you know, the loyalty side of the game. But each to their own, you know. That's part of life.
Well, Kieran, you had a great career, mate. Congratulations for that. Playing for Arsenal, playing for the national team England. I would have killed somebody to play for England. So congratulations. Thanks very much for joining us on the Two Robbies podcast, and hopefully we'll get to speak to you again.
Let's get you back when Arsenal win the title at the end of the season in May.
Let's do it.
Thanks, mate. Listen, have a great
pleasure, boys.
Have a great rest of this weekend. Thanks for coming
on.
Take care.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Well, what a brilliant insight that was to have Kieran Gibbs on our podcast. As I said, hopefully we'll get him on if Arsenal do the crazy thing and win the title, first one in 19 years. Okay, Mr. Musto, let's recap the rest of the big stories from another fascinating weekend in the Premier League. Let's start it at Old Trafford. Manchester United, on the back of that 7-0 defeat to Liverpool last week, got a good result for one in the Europa League, which I think starts to make things better. But, you know, trying to get back to business in the Premier League. 0-0 draw with Southampton that was impacted by a Casemiro straight red card. That's 2 red cards now in his last 3 Premier League games, when he'd had no direct red cards in his career before, which is incredible. I thought that Southampton were lucky maybe not to give a penalty away. I know we might have different views on that one. But Manchester United 0-0, that has to go down as a decent result for Ruben Selles in Southampton. Man United,
disappointing, isn't it?
A disappointing one, yeah, really. At home to Southampton, expect a little more.
Yeah, and of course the 10 men makes a big difference. And first off, I think, you know, I had a couple of people on social media like, was it really a red card? And I understand why some people say that, Rob, because, you know, his boot hits the ball first and then it skims off. But, you know, again, when you've been in the game, you know how dangerous that tackle was. And you know that some players, I'm totally not saying he did this, but it's been done before where you skim a bit of the ball
and you catch the shin.
And you're still a bit high
there. And if Al-Khamazi's leg is straight and it's planted, Rob, that's a really horrible thing.
Yeah.
It was a reckless challenge and it endangered the safety of an opponent. Ticked both of those boxes.
Force. the contact point was high. Yeah.
In terms of Casemiro, Rob, because as I was saying, the stats are out there that he's never had a direct red card before in his career. He gets two at Manchester United. Start to try to explain why this could happen. Is he trying to sort of prove a point? Is he taking on so much work? Does he feel like this Premier League is like, okay, I've heard about Premier League, I'll show people I'm not to be messed with. It's a combination of a few?
I don't know. Maybe he sees a league that's so intense and the fans are right there and it's brilliant atmosphere at Old Trafford, isn't it? And he knows that the physicality in the league is high. Maybe he's wanting to say that I can handle that. And I know he can handle that. I've seen him play enough times to know that he can tackle. But maybe he's just given the team, given, you know, that he is the defending guy, he's protecting, it's his job to try and get his foot in, just a little bit overzealous. Maybe just trying a little bit too hard in terms of, I'm a tough guy, I can win these tackles. I mean, it was a bit of a shocker of a challenge. But again, you know, an experienced player that's won everything. He visibly was pretty devastated, and all the players, four games, Rob.
I've just got the games. Yeah, Fulham in the FA Cup, Newcastle in the league, Brentford in the league, Everton in the league.
We know what a great player he is, what a big loss it is. And now, surely, as he sits in that dressing room and he's probably his head in his hands, he's a winner. And you'd think he'll now adjust his game a little bit. Okay, this is crazy. I've done this a couple of times. I'm no use to my team when I'm in here and they're down to 10 men and he's missing for the next four games now, isn't he? So I would think that you're not going to see it much more because of who he is and how he'll adapt himself to becoming a player that can still do the defensive side of things, but not maybe let the occasion get the better of him. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the same. It took me back in the early 2000s. I remember doing an interview with Michael Essien, who'd just come from French football, signed at Chelsea. I think it was around 2005, 2006 kind of time. And I remember he made a really rash challenge in one of his first games in the Premier League and got a yellow card, or maybe got a red card. Not too dissimilar to Casemiro. And I remember doing an interview with him a few weeks after and saying, you know, that tackle that you did in the game. And his words were, Rob, coming to the Premier League and with all the fire and intensity that's there, he wanted to prove a point early on. He wanted to let people know, if you want to go tough, I'll go tough. And it was interesting. Some of them, I thought, wow, is that what he was thinking?
So he wants to set his stall.
He wants to set his stall in terms of if physical players want to come in the middle of the park, and what a brilliant player he was, technically, physically, tactically, and everything else. Mm. But I just wonder if a bit of that's in Casemiro, that you know, he wants to show that, you know, I'll be the boss in there. And it was interesting today, Rob, because he was almost a bit singular in his role. Played Bruno at times, and got a little bit higher. They had Vegas and Sancho. Sancho was
started as number 10.
Started as number 10. Rashford on the left, Anthony right. So it wasn't like it's him and Fred and these two people to do the work. He was the guy who was getting both sides of the pitch. Now he's good enough to do that. But again, I just wonder if maybe just an overburden of work, just thinking I've got to make sure I win this tackle. It's just such a shame because he's so important to the football club and he's been such a great addition to the Premier League.
Anything else that disappointed you? I mean, again, those games going on at the same time. When I watched Man United, it looked like a wild game. The last 20 minutes or so, it was wild.
Southampton had chances,
totally had good chances.
They were attacking. They hit the post late.
Even the game up a little bit with United
even,
at 10.
Yeah, it was pretty even, and United had a couple of good looks. Southampton had a few. Yeah, Walcott looks re-energised again, had a couple of good opportunities. De Gea makes a good save. Walker-Peters smashes one against the post from a set-piece routine. One other big incident, and Eric Ten Hag said, actually, he thought the referee influenced the game, and he said on two occasions, I think he's talking about the red card for Casemiro, which maybe he's got to say that he didn't think it was red. The other was a handball shout on the Southampton defender, Bella Cotter, who we both like, who was a young player as the balls come in, Rob. He kind of goes down with both hands, and then almost like one hand throws towards the ball, and then he pulls it away at some speed. The more we saw it, the more I'm saying, that's a handball, that's a penalty kick. Surprised that the referee wasn't asked to go and look at it or go to the monitor. I'm not quite sure what VAR's doing in those situations, but got away with
one. I agree on that one. On that one, I think it probably was. I mean, handball, mate. What was the one of the weekend?
Adam Smith for Bournemouth with the header from Diogo Jota.
I feel so bad for him.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him because I watched it many times and he had to use all his leverage to get up to challenge. And then as he came down, the natural movement was his arms to go up again.
Yeah.
I mean, is that, I guess that's where we are.
Yeah,
there's no way in any world that he deliberately did that. But I guess with his arms being away from his body,
instinctively,
so now players they can't go flat out as a lunge if it means their arms move away. They have to change the way that they play. I just, we don't need to go there, but the handball stuff.
That was the Liverpool one, wasn't it? Yeah, maybe
it was a toughie.
About that. But yeah, 0-0. So just a little line on Ruben Sellers, Mussy, just to move on, because I'm kind of taking more and more interest in him. I think he's an interesting guy. I've listened to a few of his press conferences, listened to a few of the players talk about him. They kind of feel that there's something building at the football club. Two wins, one draw, and a defeat now in his four games in charge. Thought his team were very well set up again, Rob. Nice balance between the game. Good pace with Suleiman on one side, Walcott the other, Alcaraz centrally, Che Adams up front who tries hard, but maybe you could do a bit more quality. But it's a balanced team. Lavier and Ward-Prowse sitting behind those two.
Yeah, good players.
Good players, man.
Yeah, do you know what? And we just had a little chat a few seconds ago, Rob, about this, and we've talked before about it. This team is coached in a way that wants to attack and score goals. Yeah. And I think you're seeing now, first off, no really bad teams in the Premier League.
No.
And it's interesting, Rob, and maybe some of the other teams that we're going to quickly address, we can touch on it. But I feel like some of the lower teams now actually look like scoring.
Yeah.
And some don't. We can look at the table and, you know, Everton got a 1-0 victory.
Yeah. Crystal Palace don't look like these goals.
No, they don't. Forest find it hard to score goals at times. They've got plenty of options.
Yeah.
So there's West Ham United.
West Ham struggles for goals,
You know, it's going to be an incredible fight to the end of the season. But I kind of like the way that even the lower teams are finding ways tactically to get on the front foot and to score goals. And other teams, like a little higher in the league, Fulham's done it brilliantly.
Yeah.
A goal threat. Mm. You can say Brentford. The way that they play in general, with their focus, their identity to attack.
Newcastle.
It's the way the football's gone, hasn't it, over the last 4 or 5 years.
Better
that instead
coaches,
of sitting back and blocking up and trying to grind away, that teams now are trying to. And Southampton are a good example.
I made to Rebecca today when we talked about Newcastle, about West Ham. Let's go to Newcastle, Rob, because the big game at St. James's Park, not in great form. Really interesting with the team selection, made changes at the top end of the pitch. There was 5 changes all in. Cher came back in. Willock came in for Joe Ellington, who's suspended. It's a yellow card accumulation. Right. But up top of the pitch, Rob, Almiron got a rest. Murphy came in on the right. So Maximin came on the left. I think Anthony Gordon has got a knock, whether he would have started or not, but he was a bit of a knock.
Yeah,
and the big one that we've talked about, Alexander Isak getting the start ahead of Callum Wilson. Wilson went to the bench. And generally, Rob, it looked lively, didn't it?
Oh, I thought it was brilliant. I thought the changes were magnificent changes. Mm. Great changes. Exactly what the team needed at this moment in time. Mm. Players that have had minutes before that have been brilliant, Almiron being the one. But also Joe Willock, by the way, in midfield that was great earlier in the season. They've had to sit on the bench a little bit now. Others have done well. It's a great time to bring him back. I've seen many comments about Willock, particularly Jacob Murphy, and how they played on the right-hand side, the influence they had. I think Alexander Isak, Rob, we know what sort of talent he is. He's got that unpredictability about the way that he plays. He's kind of languid. He can drag the ball. He's skillful. Great header for his goal. Leads the line well. Floats off. He's a bit like a false nine, really, even though he looks like a proper nine. I thought the changes were great. It was back to incessant Newcastle attack. Difficult game for Wolves. There's a moment in the second half, like, God, Wolves, they were getting battered from all sides. I just didn't know whether at some point, like, you know, whether Newcastle should have scored. Get that second goal to make it 2-0. Because when Wolves came back into it, again, there was a bit of a panic on. But I thought the changes were great. Reset, good time to reset for Eddie Howe. Because they dropped off a little bit.
Just needed it,
And now, with the table, plenty of games to go. They're, of course, right in it for the top four. I thought it was an excellent game. I enjoyed the game and good changes. And the players that came in were hungry to do well, and they did.
There was an incident that's divided people. I think it might even divided us. It was early on in the game. It was Raul Jimenez runs onto a ball that Nick Pope takes a bad touch as a goalkeeper. He's not brilliant with his feet, Pope, actually. We watched him a few times. I was talking with Tim, and Tim saying he's very cautious. Anyway, Jimenez runs him down, nicks the ball, runs across him. There's a coming together. Now, it depends how you view the coming together. Jimenez goes down. The camera goes to the referee, who's shaking his head and saying no. and then pointing to his ear and almost saying to the Wolves players, no. So I'm assuming VAR's looked at it and gone, not a clear and obvious error.
Right.
No penalty kick, no dog zone, no foul of any sort. The outcome of the whole situation was Newcastle got a goal kick and the game restarted. Tim instantly said, that's a foul, that's a red card, that's a dog zone. And Tim said he'd actually played in a game against Sunderland when he did a similar thing, took a bad touch, somebody nicked it off him, he went to swipe and went off. So he said, I get what Pope's done and I know what he's trying to do, but he thought it was red. I agree that every time I saw it, I thought the contact by Pope was strong enough to be a foul. A foul in the box is a penalty, and the denial of a goal-scoring opportunity in that situation is a red card.
Let's just go on that, first of all.
Okay.
The touch that takes away from them after they collide.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that touch was a bit heavy, Rob. Would he have collected that ball?
Well, it doesn't mean that he has to collect the ball.
Well,
it's got to be within playing distance, I assume.
Yeah.
That ball wasn't running. I don't think that ball was running out if he doesn't get touched. I think he gets to the ball. Mm. And that's all you've got to say. He doesn't have to score. He's got to be able to have the chance
and if,
to
and
score.
And if he stays on his feet
correct.
And he reaches because it was kind of a little bit of a heavy, he flicked
out.
It away.
Yeah, he tried to
it was dribbling
it
out. Now, if you think he can get there, then obviously the stock's up because he brings it back
absolutely.
In and there's no goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So that's a huge call in itself.
Yeah.
I know the Graham and commentary...
He was okay, he was at the ground. He was okay, and he thought that it was almost like that Jimenez almost angled his body into Pope, and that was where the coming together was.
Yeah.
And he was okay with it.
Yeah.
And listen, one thing we have between the group of us is that we're very respectful of others' views, and it's not like we're right or he's right.
And we are I am never gonna.
No,
because two of you guys thought it was.
I'll say it is.
I think it's super borderline for me.
Yeah.
So I'm not as strong as you and Tim about being a foul. Reason why is that when Raul comes towards the ball, he's kind of on an angle and he's going in line with the goalkeeper. Now he flicks a ball inside and the ball spins.
Yeah, he away from him.
I don't know what
together.
Nick. Yeah, they come together.
Mm.
I mean, Nick Pope didn't get to the ball and there's contact. I get your point.
Yeah.
But he was clever as well because he flicked the ball away and his movement goes into Nick Pope. They come together.
To make the contact.
So it's one of them when everybody
call.
Listening and watching this, like you make your own decision. Mm. It's super subjective. I had no problem with it at the time watching the game live where not given. I don't think it's a clear and obvious error, Rob. I didn't, right?
Yeah.
So, if we re-referee it and we did it again, we sit down with Tim and Graham and we can go back and forth. And maybe it may have been a penalty, but I don't think it was what we understand the rule VAR to come in for. It's clearing up howlers. It's clearing up awful decisions. I didn't think it was an awful decision, but I totally see where your point is and Tim's point. I was just a little bit more on, maybe they're coming together.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big point.
It was a big point in the game because if they go down to 10 men and lose a goalkeeper, very big different change for the Wolves team who are fighting well. And had one or two good looks, actually, Rob. He changed his system a little bit, changed his side. He brought Neto on at half-time. He Chang Wan came in. They played underneath Jimenez. He went to three at the back at one stage later on when they got to 1-1 to hang on to it. Then Almiron does his little bit of magic.
Signature goal, by
Almiron,
the way.
Yeah.
That's a signature
Dots
goal.
Outright,
yeah,
plays a 1-2.
Yeah, runs in.
Gets it back. Yeah, that was Almiron early season.
I mean, he scored
it?
So many by the way, isn't it?
Yeah,
and it's a simple way. Runs inside, gives to somebody, keeps
give
going.
And go, yeah.
And because that deep run, it's got pace going on, and he goes by. And, amazing reaction from him as well, isn't it?
Brilliant reaction. Great scenes. And, good win for
I thought they were good. They were full value.
They're flying again.
Yeah.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So let's talk about Tottenham, my friend, because after a real disappointing week in Champions League, I mean, you're really never too sure what you're going to get. At home to Nottingham Forest, you'd like to think win. No surprise, first two goals, the Prince, 20 Premier League goals now for Prince Harry, closing the gap on Erling Haaland. Two more great finishes. Heung-min Son gets him a third goal, and Forest sort of have a consolation goal with Joe Worrall with a header. Andrew Ayew misses a penalty, you know, the story of the game. But in terms of Spurs, I thought good result, actually. Solid result for a Spurs team that we know is, I think I've called them snakes and ladders, shoots and ladders, I think. Up and down, Rob.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of attention after the Antonio Conte interview, wasn't there, this week, when he's talked about the club and they've got to get my spirit and if I'm going to be here a long time. And what I heard, he was almost saying, let's just focus between now and the end of the season. Let's get to the end of the season, then we'll talk about my contract and Harry's contract and all those other things.
And there's also talk with the interview with Richarlison.
Yeah.
The interview that he did.
He wasn't happy.
We know he's an emotional player and he's like frustrated. And I mean, I like it when a player, and I think many people have said, what did he do wrong? What did he do wrong? He just said, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I want to play 5 minutes. I want to play more. I think you said it in the broadcast, Rob, about the manager, what a great time to put him in there.
Yeah.
You want to play?
On you go.
Oh, on you go then. Yeah. I mean, it's like...
Yeah. You want to... Show me.
If you want to play, you show me. And Kulusevski was just out of form a little bit. And why not have Richarlison and Son and Harry Kane playing as a front three?
Yeah.
I think Richarlison deserves a run in the side. He deserves a run of starts. Maybe he's going to get it now. He had a strong game, was involved, assisted.
Son got his goal as well.
So that's good. It's like, it seems with Spurs, like... they have a few bad results and we all jump on them.
And then they come back.
Yeah. Like they've got a great knack of coming back to get a result. So it will continue, Rob, this whole thing. The top four race will go to the end. There'll be bits where they're disappointing. The football is awful. It's boring. You wonder why they waste minutes just sitting behind the ball. And then they get great results as well. I still would be, even if they get in the top four, Rob, I mean, the whole Antonio Conte thing, it is about where they finish, isn't it? It's about where they finish, and it's about a conversation. They finished fourth again. We did it last year. Are you going to give me more money to make this team better?
Yeah.
Or because that's all it is. That's every single interview, it goes back to I'm working with
quality. Absolutely. So they've just got to keep it going now to the end of the season. There's a bit of a race on for fourth spot, to be fair. Newcastle get back to form. Liverpool knowing they can have days. Not even like to Brighton and Bexley in Chelsea, actually. We're going to talk about that. Bex said recently, 3 wins in 3 for Chelsea in a week. She said, well, have they just gone a little run now? You know, Champions League football. And I'm like, really? I said, that's a big call. Chelsea, 3 weeks, 3 wins in a row in all competitions. Good performance in the Champions League. We talked about that in our midweek potty, didn't we? That Graham Potter looks a different guy.
Yep.
Gets another result. Good result going away at Leicester. 3-1 win, Rob. I thought they were pretty dominant for good periods of the games. Chilwell, Havertz and Kovacic with the goal. A couple of lovely goals, weren't they? Havertz.
Lovely goal.
And Kovacic with the kind of volley.
The volleys, yeah.
Is this now the real start of Graham Potter at Chelsea? Can we kind of, can't erase what's going on, but can we start to think about moving forward, stepping forward and the structure is starting to look a lot better.
Yeah, I think we've said now that the three at the back looks good. When you've got the wing-backs, Reece James didn't play. No. Loftus-Cheek can do that, does a pretty good job there. Chilwell scores, volley. So I think the system suits them really well. I really like Kovacic. Always have liked him as a footballer alongside Enzo. Two players that will sit and hold and can defend, but also play a little bit. Yeah. Enzo's little clip over the top for Havertz is nice volley. It's brilliant. Yeah. He's got that in his game, Rob. Yeah. Seen that many times before. The ability to play balls over the top, which is great. What I found most interesting about this game, Rob, and I kind of liked it, was the front three.
Yeah.
And then we know that Graham Potter tweaks, changes, thinks things, and maybe he's just still trying to find a way to get his new expensive players into the team playing well. Mudryk playing as a central forward, Rob.
Yeah.
He played the central player, Havertz to the right, and João Félix to the left-hand side. Now, a couple of things, obvious things. Mudryk normally plays on the left-hand side. Maybe a way of trying to get him involved more. He can use his pace going into channels both sides, threatening behind more than Havertz kind of did. But I don't know. I just liked Mudrick
and that goes back
there.
To the swapping. Remember, Sterling and Havertz, wasn't it? That worked quite well last week.
The interchanging.
Having Havertz from that spot.
And also, of course, what they're doing, obviously, is playing Kai Havertz not central.
Yeah.
Off to the side a little bit, which I think now, after what we've seen with him, Rob, I think it probably is his best spot.
He said
when it's not the nine.
He said something, Graham Potter, and he just dropped out, but he said getting Kai in a few different spots is helping his game.
Right.
And so,
so I kind of like that, and I like that they're doing the same thing with Mudrick, trying him in a different spot, a central player. Again, things will change, maybe, and others will come back into the side. But I kind of liked the front three, Rob. Leicester City playing away, right? This is interesting, down the bottom of the league.
Yeah.
I guess what we said earlier on, they're so open. They're not playing with any kind of bothered about the bottom of the league table. Mm. We're playing how we play. We're expansive. We'll attack. You attack. Yeah. We'll have that game because we've got some good players, and they have got some good players. What's happening is they're getting done more than they're winning when it's an open game of football. Yeah. But their style helped Chelsea in this game. And I thought it helped the front three. The front three weren't up against a defensive, packed defensive unit. They're against an expansive side.
Yeah.
And Chelsea looked really good on the counter-attack. Mm. Really good on the counter-attack when you've got Felix, you've got Mudrick and Havertz. A nice little combination of such. And Felix, you know, again, it's the... how many times is he at the woodwork, by the way?
The
crossbar... Yeah. Love watching him play. So I enjoyed the front three, but maybe I liked it even more because of the way Leicester played. And in other teams, it might be not as
easy. There's two challenges in this game, Rob. I don't know if you saw them. Pereira with a lunge on Felix that...
Pereira,
didn't get anything. Didn't even get a card.
Crazy. A red for me.
I thought it was a red card.
No, I didn't think it was a red card.
And Amarty kicked out at the ball and then gave the studs in the chest of Havertz.
Yeah.
Which, again, was one of those where I thought it was a yellow card but could have bordered on red.
Yeah.
I thought he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Just got to be careful, Leicester, that obviously things ain't going well. If you know, start losing one or two people, Rob, on running, things go very quickly sliding when you're in
the... What are they on points, Rob? You've got a table there. What are Leicester on?
Leicester City at the moment. 16th in the league and they've got 24 points. I mean, Bournemouth have got 24 points. They sit bottom four, so they're only out of the bottom three, on goal difference.
Yeah, and it's I don't know, it's scary. If they lose one or two of their most important attacking players, the way that they defend or don't defend, the way they try and play against every team, then and the goals dry up a little bit at the other end, they could. I mean, they're all in trouble. It's a crazy table for that. But I those challenges. I think just one thing on that, Rob, right? The studs... On that, it wasn't the Amarty one, it was the...
Pereira, yeah.
You know, sometimes when you attempt to win the ball, kick the ball, tackle the ball, your foot goes a little bit up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And if you don't get the ball and it makes contact, I just think that one looked really bad, but it's not excessive force. Yeah, I just think that line of red cards now, Rob, are we getting to a point where any time, you know, the studs are up a little bit and I it's a red card? I thought it was a yellow.
I just thought it was high. I thought it was dangerous. I think if it becomes a bigger injury for Felix, I think it becomes a bigger issue. I just didn't like the challenge. I've got to be honest. I didn't like the challenge. I thought he was a little bit lucky to get away with anything. But they weren't lucky enough to get the win. Good win for Chelsea. Another 3 points and a bit more confidence coming back into the camp. Just a few of the other results, Rob. Everton 1, Brentford 0. Our friend Dwight McNeil with an early goal.
Go on, Dwight.
Got
good strike.
Dwight goals and assists, McNeil. Great strike.
Well, that's the blueprint for...
I mean, 1-0 win for Sean Dyche is the way that they... When you look at those teams, Rob, and you talk about Leicester defending, which couldn't be more opposite than how Everton defend, with a bit of organisation and structure and If Everton can find the goals, you feel that they can stay up.
Because they need one.
Yeah.
They just need one. Yeah. Where Leeds...
Leicester, possibly.
Yeah.
Two or three,
might need
possibly.
More than one. So it's... Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fascinating. Mm. That bottom of the table and Leeds, you know, where they
Leeds
are right
2-2
now.
2-2 with Brighton. Did you see anything of this one?
I saw the goals. I saw the highlights of this one.
Yeah. So... Both teams started quite well. Brighton go ahead. McCarthy with a nice little header.
Yeah, and then nice header,
Jack Harrison involved in all kinds of things. He assists. Patrick Bamford, deflected goal. Great to get him back in the team. Then they go down to an own goal. Jack Harrison trying to clear it from his own...
He just shanked it, didn't he?
He shanked it off his left foot. I mean, I don't know how he did it. It seemed like it would have been harder to score than miss on that occasion. But that's 2-1. And then Harrison bends in a beauty from the corner. In between that, Rob, I don't know if you saw in the highlights, 2-1, Danny Welbeck came on as a second half sub, wriggled past a couple of defenders, one-on-one with
smashed
the keeper,
smashed it
over the top, and De Zerbi, like, his face was like thunder. Mm. And then, however long later, when Jack Harrison gets the winner, De Zerbi was kicking bottles and
equalizer.
Bottles and
yeah.
equaliser.
Yeah.
Because he knew that could have been a big win. Yeah. I'm still concerned for Leeds, mate. I've got to be honest. I'm still concerned for Leeds United in the Premier League.
I am as well. And it will go back to the big decision of Jesse Marsh and firing him and it being a situation now where I don't know whether they thought that somebody was going to come in, Rob, and tweak things a little bit and they were going to be okay and win and get points, get away from that trouble. But it's not a situation and they are no better. Bamford is scoring again. They got another option. The young kid.
Yeah, Rodrigo was on the bench, came on as
well. Oh, that's important.
Belt, so yeah, getting him back.
Only 10 goals, I think he might be the top goal.
He's
definitely
goals,
top goal scorer.
So we didn't talk about Nyonto as well. He could even play him as a second striker, maybe off somebody to get him back.
So they've got some attacking. They can score. Leeds can score.
They're going to concede, don't they? Yeah. They're going to concede. Mm. And finally, West Ham 1, Villa 1. Villa go 1-0 up through Ollie Watkins, who's in a nice vein of form from Villa's point of view for West Ham. They got back into the game, the penalty kick. I wasn't convinced it was a penalty. Remember, did you see Pacatol goes down under challenge?
I didn't think that was a penalty.
He just stands behind him. Pacatol goes
bad.
Down.
That was a bad one.
Benrahma smashes it into the back of the net. But a few boos at the end for David Moyes. They don't play now. They've got FA Cup game, Rob, and their next game is April the 2nd in the Premier League, which by the time they could be bottom three. They're just out of it now on goal difference. And Bex does the usual great question that you know is coming. Is this or would this be the ideal time if you're going to make a change to make it, to give somebody 2 or 3
I don't think it's... I'm not sure it's...
You know, Tim and I both
agree
that... The Europa Conference League is... 9 wins there. Yeah. It's a bit of a confidence.
A different level. Premier League's a different level.
But, you know, you almost, if you sack David Moyes, you're almost trying to find a David Moyes to come in and save you, which kind of feels a bit strange. What I would say, Rob, and it was the point you made and I made to Bex on the broadcast, is the difference with West Ham of the past and what West Ham seems, West Ham don't mind the opposition having the ball and they're well set up. Then they like the counter-attack. They like to nick off you. But the teams now who have the ball are better in possession. They don't make as many mistakes. You know, Unai Emery's at Villa compared to Stevie Gerrard. Marco Silva's Fulham. Fulham used to come up and eventually you think they'll give us the ball. Brentford, you know, Wolves are decent in possession.
Yeah,
there's a lot more teams who are better in possession
than West Ham are.
And so because of that, that slightly worries me with West Ham, that they might have to have a little flip of this system of play.
But he ain't going to change, is he, Rob? I don't think he's going to change.
No, he isn't. And to be fair to Tim made the great point today. He said, David Moyes has had a 20-year managing career doing it a certain way.
Yeah.
At this stage in career, he ain't going to change.
No, he isn't. What's astonishing to me is that, you know, if you're the ownership or you're the fans and you see the club spend a lot of money, Rob, in last summer, and they go from there to relegation.
I saw the bench. Ings, they've got Antonio, they've got Benrahma, they got Fernandes.
Yeah, Jared Bowen scores goals.
They got Souček.
I know.
They got Pacatol.
I know. Who's a play for? I mean, he's. I know. It's
and that's a bit that
in the summer,
yeah,
the ownership
might
say,
okay,
we stayed up, but we're kind of better than that, and we've gave him the whole season, Rob. And I know that, you know, he said like integrating these new players is difficult. The whole season to improve. If I was director of football at West Ham, I'd be like, let's stick with David Moyes, trust him to get us out of it. He's done it before.
Correct.
But in the summer, let's have around a little bit. You know, I mean, De Zerbi, my friend. I mean, Roberto De Zerbi. I think there's quite a lot. I mean, how good would he be for West Ham United, by the way?
How good would he be for Tottenham? I took him in for Tottenham.
I know, I would too. I would too. And we're a bit knee-jerk there, by the way.
We love a knee-jerk.
I love knee-jerk.
He deserves it. That's time to wrap it up after a bad line like that. So another chapter of the Premier League in the bag. Two top teams going toe-to-toe to keep the race alive at the top. At the bottom, there's 9 clubs now in danger of relegation, so drama ahead at both ends of the table. We'll be back on Thursday. That's March the 7th. Teams, make a date in your diary. We'll react to midweek Premier League games Champions League games from Tuesday and Wednesday, and then Europa League, which still includes Arsenal and Manchester United. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Mustard, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe. Stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night. Good night.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.